Okay, well then we'll call it officially as the Bergen Amateur Radio Association TechNet here tonight, held on 146955, the Chestnut Ridge repeater, and with their courtesy, we're using a repeater tonight for our TechNet. Gordon at W2 Tango 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 is with the Boy Scouts. He's been drafted, but he will appear maybe next week. And again, the net here usually runs by identifying the. If you want to check into the net, please identify your name, your call sign, and whether or not you have any comments or questions or with just standing by to listen. Please give me a clue, and I'll try to get an organized list here. First of all, we have K2ZO with some comments and some information. If anybody else out there listening who would like to identify, please come now with your call.
This is WE2R, Charlie, with nothing to say.
Hey, Charlie, thanks for listening in anyway. Anybody else? QRZ, I thought I was detecting a quiet carrier there, but this is K2AMI for the K2VAR net, looking for check-ins to the Baronet. If you're out there, please run your private line tone to PL 141.3 and come on down. KO2OK, Bennett here. No questions or comments at this moment. Okay, Bennett, thank you very much for no questions or comments, but stand by. Anybody else? Okay, so far we only have three check-ins. Perhaps we'll get the net rolling, and maybe somebody else will join us in a few minutes. Point out that we have no Barra function scheduled this week until the Barra Kit Night, which is next Tuesday night over at the Washington Township Senior Citizens Room. It's in the municipal building at the Washington Township. We do have coming up on August the 15th the Barra Picnic. Barra Picnic officially starts at the time we get the pavilion available, and that's 10 a.m. in the morning, from 10 until 3 in the afternoon. Don't expect too much to happen at 10, but by 11, 12 o'clock we should be rolling along with an organized picnic. Heidi will be mainly in charge of most of the food. And if you'd like to bring any drinks other than what you suspect might be there, like if you prefer diet sodas of some type that are not going to be supplied, or any other type of drinks other than non-alcoholic drinks, please bring them along. We should have some fun, weather permitting. We do a little pavilion from 10 till 3 on Sunday, August the 15th. All right, with that information aside, let's go ahead and see what... first of all, do we have any other check-ins now?
W2JEK, John, no questions.
Okay, John, thank you very much. W2JEK recognized. So. Anybody else before we start a little bit of a net here?
2FT, Harry.
Hey, Harry, thanks for checking in. Do you have any comments, questions, or information, or are you just listening?
Okay, no particular comments or anything, and I'll just be listening and see what somebody else might have. And then maybe I'll comment and we'll see.
Yeah, you're certainly free to do that. Please do comment if you have any questions or information that will contribute to the net. Anybody else wishing to check in? Okie dokie, then we'll start with Jim K2ZO. Jim's got some new information he'd like to spread the knowledge on. So come on in there, Jim.
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. Okay, we ran into a little problem with Jim, KC2VRY, who has a Yaesu transceiver, and that transceiver has a switch that goes to the amplifier, which is nothing more than an open collector to ground. And the problem is that he cannot drive and key the amplifier that he has, which has a negative voltage. The SB200 is kind of a copy of the Collins design. And that unit has a negative voltage. It's one of the few few amplifiers I know that, is a problem that way. And it appears, after doing a little bit of research, that nobody really makes much in the way of an easy-to-use switch, though some people do make some that are a relay. Most of them are a transistor, and they're really designed to switch a positive voltage. And I just recently found a device that might solve the problem here. And I'm just testing it tonight here. Let me drop it a second. Okay. This is a very interesting device to interface things to. It's made by Fairchild. I think it's also made by a few other companies. It costs all of a whopping $1.23. And actually, if you buy more of them, you can get it for less. And it's called an HSR, Hotel Sierra Romeo 412. And it consists of a photodiode and a light-emitting diode, which is connected to two of the pins. And it's just a diode. There's no limiting resistor. You have to supply it. And then on two of the other pins is a FET. And on another two pins is another FET. And the two switching FETs have their source connected, which is a very interesting thing. But anyway, there are two FETs that this LED switches. When it takes anywhere greater than 3 milliamps through it, through a source of electrical power, electrical voltage, with a series resistor, of course, since it's an LED, it will switch, and it will switch both of these FETs. And you can actually switch two different voltages if you wish, or you can combine them and make them in parallel, or you can put them in series. And why would you want to do that? Well, if you put the two FETs in series, since they have protective diodes across them, it will switch either AC or DC, because with the two FETs being switched and the two polarities, since their sources are connected together, it will switch either AC or DC. You don't have to think about it. Also, you don't have to think about the polarity, because if you come into it with a positive voltage, one of the FETs will switch that. If you come into it with the negative voltage, the other one will switch. And, of course, the protective diode across it will just give you a path out. So you can make yourself a universal-type interface. And if you do a search on Fairchild, just do a search on an HSR 412, you can find this little baby. Let me drop it again. Okay, and now the good news. Each one of these things will switch 400 volts at 200 milliamps. And if you have a load, now normally your amplifier, which is what we're going to do, switch an amplifier from a transceiver, has typically, as most of them do, about 80 mils going through that relay. Some of the ones that are lower voltage may have a little bit more, but that's pretty much it. And this has 100% rated overload protection as far as that switching goes. So you can decide to take these two FETs, put them in parallel, switch a bigger load if you know your polarity. But if you don't know your polarity, or even what your voltage is, AC or DC, just as long as it's no more than 200 mils, you can just hook this thing up and go away. So you can make yourself a universal switching unit. Now, I've been playing with it here, and I've been driving it with a 1,000-ohm resistor and a 9-volt battery and a couple of clip leads, and I hooked it up to the Collins amplifier I have here from the county, and it keys that no problem, because the idea is to make a universal interface for that so people can use other transceivers. So anyway, that's what it is, and As I said, the price is right. So back to net. This is K2BAR for any this is K2ZO for any other comments.
Okay, thank you, Jim. And again, using a 9-volt battery with a very minor drain, you could get many weeks of use out of it. Certainly, you could get to a contest with no problem with it. If you wanted to adapt that to a 12-volt power source, you would just change your dropping resistor going to the little LED in the emitting LED of the photo switching circuit. So that you have a really nice device there. In fact, surprised somebody hasn't picked up on that and manufactured it as a universal switching element for sale on eBay. How about that? You could manufacture that and maybe sell it, huh? All right. Anybody with comments for Jim? Okay, Jim. Well, there you go. Can you produce that thing and sell it, Jim?
You know, you're probably right. Probably could. Other people are doing it, and they're just using a transistor. I was hoping that Jim, KC2VRY, was here because he's the guy that started the whole interest here. Now, I have used another device I have here, which is a heavier-duty Opto 22 relay, but it's way overkill. It's good for a couple of amps. And although I can buy them cheaply used, I would never want to buy them new because they're a little bit more expensive. And I have been using them with the Kenwood. Now, it's interesting when you go into some of these radios and see how they do it. The Kenwoods all come out with a positive voltage when the radio was keyed. So if I'm going to use this with a Kenwood, all I do is take a resistor, 1,000 ohms would be fine, even for the 12-volt, put it in series, loop it through that LED, come back to ground, and that will key it, and then hook up the amp on the other terminals. However, in looking at the schematic of Jim's radio, the ASU, FD450, what we'll have to do there, since it doesn't come out with a positive voltage on transmit, but it just gives you a collector keyed, and that, of course, wants a positive voltage. So what we're going to do is we're just going to take the 12 volts that comes out of that same accessory plug, 13.8, through a resistor, loop it through this LED, and then back to the open collector to ground. So each time the transceiver is keyed, it will key the LED. And as I said, you need anywhere from 3 to 22 mils, okay? So it's pretty good, and of course it switches in 2 milliseconds. So anyway, that will turn it on each time the radio is keyed, and then all we need to do is run the two leads to the amplifier to this thing. By the way, this thing has 4,000 volts of isolation, so it could be used in some very interesting applications, and one of them that I was thinking of is if you wanted to have a safety circuit that indicated or would interrupt your circuit or give you an indicator if your power supply went dead. All you would need to do is put this thing in series with a resistive divider off your bleeder resistors. And since it's got 4,000 volts of isolation, it'd be good. My battery going dead here? Okay, battery, check it out. Just got a strange beeping out of my handy talkie. Maybe I'm talking too much. But anyway, it could be a power good switch in a power supply very easily. And I was just looking at it with a couple of ideas. So this is a neat little gadget. And hey, for $1.23, you can't go wrong. Back to net, K2ZO.
Very good, Jim. Jim, what about QRV? Will the LED switch at a high enough switching rate?
Yes, you could run a QSK amp with this. I do with the one that I have from Opto 22 because I have my TL922 modified for full QSK. And that switches in like 4 milliseconds. So this thing switches in 2. And at 30 words a minute, or 40 words a minute, this would be no problem to switch or key or whatever you want to do. So it's an interesting thing. I bought four of them just to play with, and probably I'll buy a couple more. If you go on eBay and do a search on HSR-412, you'll find the guy that's selling these things. And they're very interesting, so you might want to pick one up, Tony. But I also bought the mini DIN plugs, and hopefully when I get them, we'll have the kit night where we'll finish that thing up and make it for Jim. Back to that, K2ZO.
Do they mount into like an 8-pin transistor? Not transistor, but a chip socket, regular 8-pin chip socket?
Yes, it plugs in a 6-pin. It's got 6 pins. You can plug it in any socket you want to. Actually, it comes in two styles. One is a surface mount, which has the pins cut off and just bent out at a 90-degree angle. And the other one has pins on it, so it plugs into a socket. The one that I'm working with here, I have just used the old dead bug type of construction, and that and the crazy glue. And I had some 10th ohm 1K resistor. So when I finish the whole thing up, I'll encapsulate it with a little hot melt glue, and that'll be it.
Okay, well, very good. Nice find, Jim. I'm sure that other people will be interested in that. Alrighty, well, is there anybody else with comments? WE2R, have you been observing the information here with any comments at all?
Just listening, Tony, thank you. I don't have any amplifiers to switch. Oh well, but interesting to listen to. Back to that WE2R.
Okay, very good. Very good, Charlie. Anybody else with comments, questions, or information for Jim? Kido Cole, I do work the VHF contest often, and I'm forever having guys ask me, what's my full six-digit grid square? And mine here at my house is Fox November 20XW. And I often wondered how could they quickly come up with a direction for the their antenna pointing. Well, there is a very nice little program put out by an ON6. I think it's ON6MU. He's got a nice website, and he's got a program that'll give you the reciprocal directions for your antenna to his from your site to the other station. It also will give you your exact grid square. And it will also give you the mileage between your house and his house, or his grid square with that location. So anybody looking for a really neat program to point their antennas when you've got a six-digit grid square on the that's in question, look for, I'm quite sure it's OM6MU, I think is the correct call. He's on a QRZ type a website, but I could give anybody who really is interested, I could email you the complete URL and get right to it. It's a nice little program that I know other people must have been using, but I've never used. And I see that in the program you can is a spot where you can put it so the program will appear on the top of your screen, and that would be really neat if you could get it to work with CT and logging program. You could, you know, aim your antennas in the right directions. We might want to explore that for the contest purposes. Bannon, have you worked at all with an antenna pointing program like that? KO2OK, are you there?
K2BAR, KO2OK. I have, Tony. You know, it's built into some logging programs like Ham Radio Deluxe. But I've also used something called Ham Grids. And Ham Grids is a program by KT4AV. And there you can, what can you do? You can convert latitude and longitude to grid squares, convert grid squares to latitude and longitude, calculate the distance between two grid squares, or calculate the beam heading using grid squares. So you can, and it'll show you also the reverse beam heading, so you can tell the other person I'm pointing in this direction to get to you. You should be pointing in this direction. So that's called HamGrid. And that website, in case anybody's interested, is www. And it's this guy's name, Mark Bellamy. And it's spelled Mark, B-E-L-L-A-M-Y, markbellamy.com/HamGrids, H-A-M-G-R-I-D-S, HamGrids. And it's a pretty nice little program. That's a standalone little program. Back to you, Tony. KO2, okay.
Okay, very good, very good. Well, there you go. I've never used it, but I'm definitely going to try to incorporate it in any future events that I do here. And I was listening earlier on 6 meters, and there was some stations coming in from Florida, but I think that's not too unusual at this time of night, or I should indicate around 8 o'clock at night, 7 o'clock at night, coming up from Florida at this time of night, because of the coastal tropical effect. There'll be some changes in weather coming up now. There'll be a cold front coming through, and if you are interested in 6 meters or even in a 10-meter band, you might want to do some listening and find some band openings in those areas. Did anybody happen to see any aurora last night? It was advertised on the news channels that there was supposed to be an aurora last night because of some ionospheric effects going on. Anybody see any aurora?
Negative. I stayed up to 1:30 in the morning. I saw the stars. I didn't see any aurora.
Negative. I didn't see it either. I took a look, but I think we were maybe a little too far south.
Okay. Well, then I didn't miss anything. Hi. My son is up in Cape Cod right now, and I haven't had a chance to discuss it with him, but he was also going to attempt to look at it from Cape Cod. He's way out in Provincetown, which is kind of near the tip of Cape Cod, at a vacation hotel out there. So I'm curious to see what his answers are concerning the aurora. I guess he would have the best chance that I could think of seeing anything out there. And again, it's going to be a little bit cloudy tonight, but would this aurora continue for a couple of nights? Does anybody know, is it scheduled for more than one night? Don't know.
I thought I heard something on the news that it would be tonight too, but I'm not sure that what latitude you can see.
Aren't they due in August, Jim?
Missed part of that. Were you talking about the meteor?
Is it called Perseus meteor showers or something like that?
Yep. In 1968, that meteor shower was absolutely spectacular. There was hundreds per hour coming. It's never been that good. A couple of years ago, I saw it and laid down in the backyard here. I looked up, and it was pretty neat. But nowhere near what it was way back in that time. But they come by and they're fast. you gotta get out of the light. The problem is we've got so damn much light pollution, and you gotta get a nice dark sky. And that was kind of difficult to do over here with all the light coming from Paramus. But pretty cool. And that's something that's worthwhile to stay up for, let me tell you.
No, isn't that due now in this month of August, kind of like the middle of the month?
I got to look. There's the Perseids and there's the Lenoids. Those are the two big ones. There's other smaller ones, but those are the two big ones that usually, you know, have hundreds of particles coming in. And when they come in, they're moving. It's amazing. And, of course, if you're listening on VHF, you hear all kinds of strange things happening. The other comment I have about the aurora was back in the 70s, there was a tremendous aurora, and the only one that I can ever remember in coming down as far as this latitude, and it was cool out. It was at that time, and it was green, of course green because of nitrogen in the atmosphere, and it was just like curtains, and when you looked north, you could see it. It was amazing. And of course, it lit up the sky like neon. And we got on the air. It was a bunch of us on 75, and then we got on 10 meters. And the van was absolutely dead, stinko. We were talking to people 500 miles away, pointing our 10-meter beams north at the aurora and having it bounce off. And we were working, guys, and of course it sounded like we were in the bottom of a bathtub.
Okie dokie, I can vaguely remember seeing some of that. I'm not just amazed at it, I'm scared of it. I wondered what's going on up there. And again, you probably have a little more chemical knowledge as to why it's green and so forth, but it was weird. Okay. Anybody else with comments to extend this net a bit more or information for us?
No comments, but N2OEL is finally here.
Well, welcome, Mr. N2OEL. We just have a few check-ins, but and there isn't too much more going on with the net, so if you don't mind, I'll add you to the list. And surely you might have a comment about something, don't you?
Okay. Think about this problem. If you want to take and operate ATF Mobile from an RV park, which probably doesn't, well, if it has trees, I don't got a problem. But if it doesn't have trees, and I have to put up an inverted V, and I have the, poles. They're 4 foot long. They're about 2.5-3 inches in diameter. They're fiberglass. And the guy sold them at the flea market a year or two ago, and I got a bag of 8 of them. How do I hold them upright using my motorhome? I thought of, taking a week off the 15th to the 21st. I'm thinking my friend a welder could take some aluminum plates or make something recently light, something I could drive over, and that would hold it, and then I'd have an upright. Another thing I was thinking of is I have a trailer hitch in the back and make something that would go into the trailer hitch, be sturdy, hold it up that way, but then of course I'd need some way to have a swivel and raise it. So I'll have access a week and a half from now to an amazing guy with a welder, a limited supply of steel plates, some aluminum plate stuff, and what do you guys think is the best way to hold an antenna? And it doesn't weigh a lot, it's just that I have to be able to get it up in the air. And if you've ever been to an RV lot, some of them, you're like in a field with the connections there, almost like the old-fashioned drive-in movie theater. It's a big field, it's got a connection. And some of them are in the middle of a forest, and you can barely fit it in there. And with those, got another problem. There's trees. I'm thinking about the big field solution. So, back to that. This is Ed Julio.
Anybody with a solution or a suggestion for Noel?
W2JEK.
Okay, John, recognize. Don, recognize. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you were you at the meeting, last Sunday's meeting, Noel?
No, Don. I had to work. I've been forced to work Sundays from 12:39. Luckily, as of September 10th, that's going to change, and everybody in my New Jersey group is switching to a work week near normal working days, Monday to Friday. They found not too many of the teachers and the stuff to call in on Sunday. It seems that these people prefer to use their company phones and company time. The state of New Jersey employees prefer to use working time to call about their health benefits. Thank you, Doug.
Yeah, okay, no. As Ron, WB2GAI, gave a talk on the antennas he used when he was over in Crete, and he has one of these 32-foot fiberglass antennas that stretches up, I guess it starts out small, and it gets pretty thin up at the top. But what he does is he ground mounts the thing. He takes a he drills a hole in the ground with a big auger. I know you won't be doing this, but he digs a hole in the ground 2 feet deep, and he inserts a piece of PVC pipe, and he has a bottom has a plug in the bottom of it, and then what he has is a four foot piece of PVC pipe that fits into that 2 foot piece that's in the ground. So he's got a piece, this 4 foot piece, 2 foot is above the ground, 2 foot is above below the ground. And in that 2 foot above the ground, he inserts the 33-foot mast. Now, I'm just thinking, would you be able to put that mast into a piece of PVC pipe somehow, at least temporarily to support it, and then use your wires from your inverted V and maybe a third piece of guy wire as a third guy to hold it up in some way. What's a possibility for you? Mount that thing in somewhere on your vehicle.
Well, one of my ideas was the trailer hitch is not going to be used for anything. Just get something that I can keep inside the RV, and when I want to use it, slide it into the trailer hitch, because the vehicle weighs 80 pounds, somewhere in that region. Well, put it this way. When my fat body moves into that vehicle, one end to the other, side to side, it don't move. So it's got really strong springs, and it's pretty stable. So I figure, what the heck, if my weight doesn't move it, if I put 50 pounds of antenna on the trailer hitch in the back, it would be stable, go straight up. I need to have enough extension to wait so I can open the doors. That's where we keep the tools and stuff. But that's what I was thinking is the quickest way. And I wouldn't even have to bolt it in because I was slide it in 6 inches, thinking of move. The other thing I was thinking of, I don't remember who did it, if it was Tony or not. Basically, I've seen people take something like basically a board, drive on the thing, and you can mount PCB pipe or wood or anything to it. And it's really, really, really stable because you just put a heavy vehicle on it. Problem with that is sometimes you're in soft ground, sometimes you're on high ground, sometimes you have to use the leveler, sometimes you have to use the jack, whatever. And the thing that you drive it on might just get punched down into the ground and might be cocked at a 20-degree angle. Not so great. So on the RV, we have to level, not so much because sleeping, but the refrigerator is based on ammonia in a complex cycle, and it's got to be within a few degrees of vertical, or else it self-destructs and turns into garbage, and there goes $900. So you always level your RV. Thank you, Don. This is Antonio.
Okay, Noel. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Well, all right. Well, if there's anything you could attach to your vehicle, such as the trailer hitch, something on the trailer hitch, and then level the over your vehicle, and once your vehicle's leveled, an antenna isn't that much. So, like you say, at the most 50 pounds, and maybe not even that. Now, these fiberglass things that Ron had, I don't think they weigh quite that much. The DJ9SQ mast or something like that, I forget what they are, were. I don't think they're quite as sturdy as the one you're talking about. But even if you only had it 20 feet or so, you could probably get a good use out of it.
Well, the other thing I have that's most unusual is the front license plate is mounted to a piece of quarter-inch plate. So we're looking at the darn thing and saying, why would the factory installed? And I mean, the bolt they used to put that into the frame was, like, amazing. So we start playing with the thing, and lo and behold, the front license plate is held up by a spring, and it'll come down horizontal to the ground. And behind it is another piece the metal quarter inch plate, put a big hinge on it. And what you do is you lift that one up, slightly above horizontal, bring the license plate part into it, and you have a step there suitable for Godzilla, made out of quarter inch plate. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that'd be really neat if I could figure out some way to mount an antenna on that, because it's already there. Anyways, one of these days at kid night, bring the van over. Last Tuesday was National Night Out, and as part of our cert, Maywood cert, we showed up at the, you know, Maywood Municipal Fields and the park and, you know, the usual stuff. But that was another idea. I was thinking front bumper. I got all sorts of frame under there. And, of course, there's a master welder. So I can put it to the side. I can put it to the front. I'm thinking not so much the size because of the 100-pound propane tank underneath the thing. You don't want to be welding too close to 100 pounds of propane. Could be nasty. So anyways, anybody get any ideas, feel free to email me. And to William. Back to you, Doug.
Okay, no, W2JEK. Yeah, well, I guess the that stuff on the front bumper, if you've got a way of... got bolts there, maybe you could just get some longer bolts and use, put a piece of pipe in a vertical position and a couple feet long that would be big enough to accommodate your 30 foot mast or whatever, and then just mount it there and leave it there in front of your car. I guess you could do that. Just assemble that, plug it in with the antenna on it, and there you are. That's a thought, too. Sounds like something almost ready-made. I haven't actually seen this to know that there might be some pitfalls in it, though. But something you might look at. Anyway, that's enough for here. Let me turn it back to Tony, K2AMI and K2BAR, W2JEK.
Well, thank you, Don and Noel. And Noel, I think that's a very good idea with me to bring it to Kid Night, and we'll have in the field observation and suggestions, which might be helpful. And again, I just took a piece of planking, I think it was a 2x6, and I attached to it a flange, a plumber's flange. It was a cast plumber's flange with a screw in it. And I screwed about a 3 or 4 foot piece of, probably a 3 foot piece of 3/4 inch pipe into the flange, because the flange accepted a 3/4 inch pipe. And then I slipped an aluminum tube over that pipe and mounted an antenna on top of that. And this plank, of course, I was underneath one of my wheels of the truck to hold it stable. Any wheel would do. Front wheel, back wheel, not a big pressure thing. And the plank didn't go anyplace. And the narrower diameter steel pipe that I screwed into the flange fit inside the aluminum mast that I was using. So I don't know exactly dimensions that you've got, but that was a very simple arrangement. Everything could be unscrewed and flattened out and stored without any problem. All right, anybody else with questions, comments, or information? Let's see. I haven't heard anything from Harry there. Harry in W2FC, have you found it interesting tonight?
K2BAR, W2FT. Yeah, it's very interesting, and I was thinking about some different situations, but as far as Noel's problem there with getting something portable, and the plank with the pipe sticking up, and then, of course, it would be just sliding that over that pipe, I mean, that would be a good temporary setup, rather quick. Either way, if it's on the hitch or if he rigs something up to the front or uses something under the wheel, the only disadvantage, obviously, is you can't move the vehicle. I don't know if you want to go to the store or do something like that, but that's the only thing that I could think of. Unless he gets a tripod and weights a tripod down with some weights, and then he could put that in, off the vehicle, close, but off the vehicle, so we could, run to the store or do whatever he's got to do. Other than that, interesting thing that Jim had come up with that relay. I know the ICOMs, well, they
they have the send relay, I think it's only ready for like 16 DC volts, like a half an amp. But it keys the L7 with no problem. I haven't had any problem with the 746 keying. And I can see with the Kenwood and some, I guess, the Yaesu's too, where you might need a another relay. So other than that, no other comments, Tony. So back to you. This is W2FT.
Okay, thank you, Harry. Thank you very much. Anybody else have any questions, comments, or information before we wrap up the net tonight? And again, a reminder that the Barra Picnic is going to be on August the 15th. It's Sunday. And again, the availability of the shelter or the pavilion that we'll have will be from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Anything you can bring along in the way of salads or munchies that might be interesting, you might want to consider that. If you like a particular drink of soft drink of some type, lemonade, water, or diet, something or other, you should best bring that along too. Basically, the menu will be composed of sandwiches. There will not be any grilling done this particular picnic. And we do hope to have some games. Maybe if you guys got any things like horseshoes. Remember, years ago when it was popular, everybody had horseshoes in the backyard. Of course, they had horses, too, in the backyard back then. I had a horseshoe set that was made out of heavy-duty rubber. It was great. It didn't clank, but it was weighted enough so you could throw it, and it wouldn't break too many windows if you threw it too far. Obviously, we don't have a place for basketball or baseball, but maybe we'd get a softball game going of some kind. How about that? Need a ball and a bat and a couple of gloves and a few bases, and away we could go with a little miniature softball game for the Barra teams. Think about something that would be a group activity that we could organize. In the last 1 year, we did water balloon tossing, which was a lot of fun if you didn't break a balloon. And Jim's report on the lake up there is that it's got lots of algae, so we may not have remote control boats this year. So let's see what happens. Okay, back to Ned for any other comments. If not, we'll wrap it up.
Ned, to Oreo.
Okay, Noel, go ahead.
No, really? I was hoping to at least have one turtle liver with cheese on top of it.
Oh, no, our cardiac awareness group has suggested that we don't make any turtle burgers. There's been an email going around of turtle burgers, and they're an oversized hamburger wrapped in bacon, and then six pieces of hot dog, or probably those miniature hot dogs, stuffed in as legs and head and tail, and you bake these things until they until they're cooked. But I think you better drain them too. But with the hamburger wrapped in bacon with hot dogs is a cardiac awareness problem.
You just see the three of us who'd eat one of those things.
You forgot the cheddar cheese. It's a third a pound hamburger, cheddar cheese on top, and then wrapped in bacon.
You'll be going back for more stints, right, Harry?
Yeah, you got that right. Jim's got to watch, too.
I said a copy of that to my cardiologist. That wasn't a good move. Didn't ask permission to eat that, did you?
I said it to him. I said, how about this? Is this okay? And he sent me back a big, in large type, no.
I understand. Okie doke. Well, let's hope that some of the cold cuts that we have are not cardiac problems either. I just love the Italian Genoa salami, which is 90% fat, you know, and 10% meat, I think. But all that fat goes right into the the stents, so I don't eat Genoa salami anymore. In fact, there was one of those news things about the nitrates they use in most of the curing of most of the cold cuts being dangerous to your health. Obviously, anything in quantity is a danger, so limited use is okay. Limited consumption, I should say.
Tony?
Go ahead.
I was watching a show on nutrition and health and all that stuff, and the person that was giving this little lecture said, here's a simple rule. Any meat product that has been taken apart, chopped up, and put back together again is no good for you.
And no salt turkey?
I don't know. I don't know how they do that turkey. I don't know if it's chopped up. I think it's just been compressed.
Can I bring my little grill?
Yeah, you can bring your little grill. What are you going to cook?
I don't know. I was thinking of bringing a turtle burger. Just watching it cook there. Listening to the comments.
You know, I'm going to bring a couple of fishing poles. For the kids, and hopefully, there's still some fish in that lake. Unfortunately, they don't aerate it, and that's the problem. But although one year I noticed they did set up an aeration thing, so maybe they will get that, get to it. But we hope to catch some fish. Anyway, just reading that the E. coli, levels in that lake and most all of the others around here are like 4 or 5 times what the acceptable level is, and it's all from all that goose poop.
It's a problem all over, Jim. That Greenwood Lake, the same problem, and I was up at Wayweyanda during the week, and the same problem. I mean, it's just overpopulated.
I saw that it was Darlington Lake last month. That people were getting a rash from the goose poop in the lake. It was creating a bacteria of some type that was giving you they call it a swimmer's rash, but it was really something in the water caused by the ducks and geese.
Yeah, next thing that happens is swine flu.
I guess in an awful lot of them lately, I think, they've been doing that and think they're going to kick up the program.
I know that in Darlington, they go early in the morning with shotguns and clean them out.
That's one way of doing it. But, the tree huggers, I mean, they're beautiful animals, but I just like anything else, the deer, the bear, they're overpopulated, they cause disease, and they kill each other off with disease, too. So hunting does have a place done right, and they limit the herds and so on. But that's a problem.
It'll be interesting to see how this bear hunt that's coming up does.
From running around Englewood and Bergenfield, you didn't have that 25 years ago.
About 2 weeks ago, he saw a bear here in Van Saun Park, right at the edge of River Edge. It was a small bear, and I wonder if that's the same one that they saw over in Bergenfield and Teaneck and over that area. I haven't heard any further sightings about that bear for a day or two now, but there are some bears wandering around.
It's funny you mention that. Every time we go out with the motorcycle group, Frank, Maddie, and a few of the other fellas, I've run into bear 2 or 3 times on some of the roads. Right on Skyline Drive, all around Greenwood Lake area, is loaded with bear up there.
One of my stepsons lives up in the Greenwood Lake area, and they see bear in the garbage pails at night. And in fact, they just can't leave the garbage pails outdoors anymore. Or any food. Even bird feeders are food for the bears. So they're just looking for food, and they want what you've got. So you can't feed them, that's for sure. Okay, guys, I think I'm going to wrap it up tonight. It's almost 10 o'clock. It's my bedtime. Hi. Actually, it's my time for a small dish of ice cream. And I have an ice cream date with my wife here at 10 o'clock. Anyway, thanks for all checking in tonight. We recognize K2ZO, W2ER, KO2OK, W2JEK, W2FT, and N2OEL. And any other stations that may have been listening and found it interesting, thanks for hanging in there. And the next Baronet will be on Monday night. There'll be the ladies' net, I think, at 8 o'clock, followed by the 28.375 frequency for the Barra 10 meter net at 9 o'clock. So have a nice weekend. Enjoy the heat. Hi. We'll see you all along the way. I'll send this list of check-ins to Bob Javits, and we'll see if we can get a couple more points for the Barra dinner, the blue and gold. It's K2AMI saying 73 to all. Have a great night. The net is closed, and the frequency is open to anybody who wants to use it. And I do want to thank the Chestnut Ridge Repeater Group for the use of their repeater for this hour. 73.